from the Ghost Knight Media Studios and Paranormal Underground Magazine, welcome to Paranormal Underground Radio. It's time to explore the unexplained with your hosts, Rick Hale and Karen Frazier.
And it is Thursday night, and if you can hear our voices, you are exactly where you need to be. She is Karen Frazier. I am Rick Hale, your host, and this is Paranormal Underground Radio at ztalkradio.com. Tonight we got a pretty good show lined up for you guys. We're going to be talking about a really controversial subject. Karen, why don't you fill our listeners in on what to expect tonight?
Well, mostly we're going to be listening to my dogs bark in the background because my son's friends all show up the second that I go on the air. So I think that's pretty much that's our topic tonight. Now we're going to be talking with a psychic medium. Her name is Jackie Chin. And one of the things we're going to be discussing is something, an editorial that Jackie wrote in last month's Paranormal Underground magazine. And it's about whether or not you should cross spirits over. And you and I have kind of gone round and round about this a little bit. So,
yeah.
We'll save it for when Jackie's here, but we both have very strong opinions on it, and I vow to be quiet and listen to hers.
Well, yeah. I mean, we can save our own personal editorial until the end, or I'm sure people will figure it out as we question. But I have made no I've never been secret about my opinions on of the spiritual side of psychical research and investigation. I do believe in it. I believe that the science and the spiritual, if people will allow it to become one, maybe one day we'll be able to prove to the entire world and show everybody that yes, there is life after death. And
yes,
that's what I hope for.
Yeah, definitely. Well, so speaking of life after death and the spiritual, so we did the ghost tours last weekend at the museum, and I was telling you off the air, but I'll tell you on the air because it's just amazing to me that this happened. A couple things. It was a very active night, first of all. I went into a space in the museum that I had never been before. It's actually an off-limits space. This isn't the Lewis County Museum of History, which, by the way, on young Master Theo's first birthday, December 3rd, will be featured on Biography Channel's My Ghost Story.
Oh, I saw that. Yeah, I can't wait to see
that. Yeah, I know. Party at Karen's house. Anyway.
I'm flying out.
Yeah, come on out. No, it's your son's birthday. You better stay home.
Right.
So we had a rather active night. There's a space in the museum that they don't let the public go into. It's a catwalk. It's got a lot of really old artifacts stored up there. And the museum director, Debbie Knapp, was kind enough to take William Becker, who's been on this show, and I up to this catwalk. Mm-hmm. And in a 15-minute period that we were up there, I got 12 EVPs on my recorder.
See, now I believe you because I know you and I know you're like completely legit, but that is like something that is almost unheard of.
That's crazy. That's like,
on average, an EVP a minute.
Yeah.
An EVP a minute.
Less than. Of different levels of clarity. So some of them are very clear. Some I would never put up as evidence, but for my own personal, cause I listened to it and then I went back and listened to it again, the whole thing, because I thought this is just crazy. Mm-hmm. It was really about an EVP a minute.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, and everybody knows how you are fantastic with listening to EVPs because you got the mom ears. Like last week's show, I will concede you whooped my ass, but good on that.
I thought it was pretty close. I think that I just beat you by one. It wasn't an ass whooping. It was not even a mandate from the spirits, really. So. Sorry, it was Election Day Tuesday. I'm going to speak that election rhetoric. But anyway, so I wanted to tell you the other two things that happened at the museum. Mm-hmm. So on the very first tour of the evening, which was 7 o'clock, we'd been in the museum for several hours by then because we had a little potluck and partay in the museum to start. And then we had the tours. And no, we had not been drinking. It wasn't that kind of a party.
See, but that's but you know what? Having that kind of party and stuff, that's great because that raises the energy in an area.
So there were a lot of people who had not been there. So by 7 o'clock, the first tour was there. We went up into the attic. I went up with a couple. One of them is a a psychic who's one of William Becker's students, and it was her second time in the museum. I took she and her husband up into the attic, and then there was another group up there as well. And we were standing there, and about 5 feet off to my right, there was this big thunk, and there was nobody in that part of the attic. We'd been through that part of the attic before I walked over, and there was a book on the floor that hadn't been there before. The books are kept on the other side of the attic, and the best part was the title of the book.
Oh, do tell, because I love this.
I know. It was Natural Law in the Spiritual World by Henry Drummond.
See, now that's a ghost or spirit, whatever, with a sense of humor. You're lucky. You get ones with the sense of humor. I get ones that smack me in the forehead and push me on my butt. I get to deal with the dick spirits all the time.
Oh, I know. I should send Robin Marie a picture of that book and see what she thinks about it.
Yeah.
But anyway, and then, so that was the first tour of the evening, and then things kind of quieted down for quite a while. There was some people felt like they had been touched, and, you know, and it, this is members of the public, a lot of them who have never investigated the paranormal before.
Right.
And so they're coming through, and they're, you know, they've got their little meters, and they're really excited because they're in a haunted place. And, and so some of that stuff you sort of have to write off to unseasoned investigators, a lot of people in the museum.
Sure.
And by the way, those EVPs, there weren't people in the museum at the time. It was before the tours. So anyway, okay. Last tour of the evening is the midnight to 1 o'clock tour. And this time it's me.
You mean
and
not
Jim,
the witching hour?
Which, yeah. What do they call it on Paranormal State?
Dead time.
Yeah, it was almost dead time. Okay. But so we were, it was Jim and I were up in the attic with a woman and her husband who were on a tour. And then Debbie was up there as well, Debbie Knapp, the museum director. And we heard this click, 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 and started to wander, and there was a pencil on the floor where there hadn't been before, and it was just short, really close to where we had been, of course. Mm-hmm. And people had been through there all night. I'd been through there. There were no pencils on the floor. I was up there with every tour, you know. So, yeah.
Well, you know, I mean, it's, you know, with the pictures that you sent me of the place and with the stories that you tell and knowing you, I know you're legit. I mean, this sounds, what is Lewis County Museum, right?
Lewis County Museum of History, December 3rd, my ghost story.
It just sounds like an area of amazing activity. And
I think it's because of the artifacts. Mm-hmm.
Quite possibly, yeah. You know, I mean, if what, you know, John Zaffis has said over the years that objects can carry energy, then yeah, most definitely.
Well, and the reason that they kind of decided that it might be the artifacts is that there was a Native American basket down in a room, and they got an EVP that said, "Help me." And then they moved that Native American basket up to the attic, and they got the same EVP.
Okay, well, there
you
go.
It did say, "Help me." It said, "Please help me.
Please help me." Well, you know what? There's a reason that, you know, a large portion of EVPs say help me because, well, something's looking for help.
Yeah. Yeah. And then I got an interesting picture, which I sent to you. And of course, you know, it's an orb.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's something like that that people are going to tear apart and tear down and look at it. And they call it a dust. They call it a bug. You know what? We were talking about this briefly, that whenever it comes to like orbs, I don't think people quite understand the law of energy conservation, that a sphere is the simplest form for energy to take. Right. So it's like if they're having trouble manifesting, or if they're trying to manifest, chances are first it's going to show up. But the difference between like an orb and an actual real spiritual energy is, I mean, when you look at pictures and you look at these orb pictures that a lot of people put out, if it's stupid looking and it's just like it's hanging there in the air and it's, you know, you can see through it.
And it reflects off a window.
Exactly. Right. Chances are that is dust condensation or a bug or whatever. But when you're looking at something and it's emitting its own light and shows movement and has a vapor trail like your picture, for example, chances are that that's actual energy. It could be a ghost or it could be earth energy. I don't know.
I just tell it, you know, the one time I get the really interesting picture, it's a freaking orb.
Yeah.
Wouldn't you know? It's just like, okay, so like this SSPR museum is going to be on TV. Mm-hmm. There's another thing. Now, what do I always say? Everybody gets into the paranormal thinking they're going to get on television, and that's absolutely not true. I would like to change that statement. I think it's true.
Do you really?
Well, okay, so I was in NWPIA. Members of NWPIA have been on television. I have been on television. SSPR is going to be on television. I'm thinking it might be true, yeah.
See, I'm just not that good looking to be put on television.
Well,
so.
Neither am I, dude. So, you know. But I'm interesting. I'm fascinating.
Right, right.
Yeah, that's what it is. Okay, so let's do this. Let's take a break. And when we come back, we are going to be talking to... you almost had me say it. I almost said Jackie Chan because you said that earlier.
Oh, my God. That would have been hilarious.
I know. We're going to be talking to Jackie Chan, and we're going to be talking about her psychic abilities. So we will be back in just a few minutes. Paranormal Underground Radio on Z-Talk Radio.
If you are a small business owner, you are paying too much for products and services. Do not spend your hard-earned cash on items you can get on trade. UTXTrade.com was formed specifically so you can trade your products or services with other companies on the network for items like advertising, computer repair, office furniture, printing, hotel stays, and much more. For more information, please visit UTXTrade.com. That's UTXTrade.com, a proud sponsor of Paranormal League of America.
Hi, this is Karen Frazier, author of Avalanche of Spirits, The Ghosts of Wellington, a new book from Ghost Night Media. In summer of 2009, I visited Wellington, Washington, a former railroad town in the Cascade Mountains of Washington State, where the worst avalanche disaster in the history of the United States occurred. 96 people lost their lives. What I found there changed my life forever. Before I visited Wellington, I wasn't sure that I believed in ghosts or even in the human soul. Now I know for sure that ghosts are real and that our souls go on after we die. You can read all about my experiences at Wellington in my new book, Avalanche of Spirits, The Ghosts of Wellington, which is on sale at Amazon.com. To learn more, visit avalancheofspirits.com.
Hi, I'm Chad Wilson, publisher and co-founder of Paranormal Underground Magazine.
And I'm Cheryl Knight, editor-in-chief and co-founder of Paranormal Underground Magazine.
Every month, Paranormal Underground explores the unexplained with a free monthly online magazine.
We take an in-depth look at all kinds of unexplained phenomena, talk with some of the field's top experts, and share the latest news and information about the paranormal.
Visit us at ParanormalUnderground.net, where you can read the magazine online, explore our paranormal evidence galleries, watch videos, participate in discussions, or read blogs with some of our writers and editors.
We hope you'll join us. Visit ParanormalUnderground.net and explore the unexplained.
Hi, everyone. It's Karen Frazier at Paranormal Underground.
And I'm Rick Hale, Paranormal Underground writer.
We're here to invite you to explore the unexplained with Paranormal Underground Radio, live and on the air.
Join us every Thursday night for paranormal talk and great guests from 9 to 11 p.m. Eastern Time on ztalkradio.com.
Do you want to keep up with what's going on at Paranormal Underground?
Then tweet us on Twitter at ParanormalUG.
Or follow us on Facebook at Paranormal Underground.
Meet us on MySpace, Paranormal Underground.
There's no need to be in the dark about what's going on at Paranormal Underground. Join us on your favorite social networking site today.
Thank you. station identification.
You're listening to ZTalk Radio Network.
Operating frequency
on ztalkradio.com.
The views expressed and opinions given by the individual hosts and their guests do not necessarily reflect those of ZTalk Radio, its affiliates, or sponsors.
And we are back. Welcome to Paranormal Underground Radio at ztalkradio.com. You know, like we referenced a little bit before the before we went to break, tonight we're going to be talking to Jackie Chin. And Jackie is a psychic medium, and she actually wrote an article in this month's Pug about kind of a controversial subject. And it's very interesting, and Karen and I, we both have very strong opinions on that, but let's ask what Jackie thinks. Jackie, why don't you tell us a little bit about the article that you wrote?
Hi, thank you for having me on the show, first of all.
Yeah, thank you.
The article is actually intended to create a discussion about regarding the moral obligations of mediums, psychics, and parapsychologists, anyone that is on having to do with this kind of work. And I really strongly believe, first and foremost, that spirits are not pets. That if you have a spiritual entity in your home, your first obligation is to, as best you can, find out why they're there, and let them know that there is a way to be able to go to the light if you have that ability to be able to do that, and really first and foremost to do that. And it comes actually from a respect of, people. And, I mean, you wouldn't keep a person in your home, that's a viable person in your home and not let them go.
Right.
It's the same. It works on the same principle.
Well, I don't want to hold the spirits here. I understand what you're saying. Yeah, I definitely have no desire to hold a spirit here. My question about crossing spirits over is this. Well, I have two. This is a two-part question, Jackie.
Sure.
The first one is, how do we know that the light is a good thing? And then the second part of that question is, how do we know that it's our job to assist them over into the light or whatever, if that's part of their spiritual path? I don't think that there are any mistakes. And so I think if there's a spirit here, there's a spirit here for a reason. And then when that spirit's done here with whatever is part of their path, then they're going to go. So there, that's my two-part question.
That's quite all right and completely understandable. How do we know that the light is a good thing? Well, a lot of people, they are under the belief that the light, as it comes from Source or God or however they want to look at it, that because many believe that the Source is from where we all come from, that it is innately a good thing. Well, not everybody in their religious beliefs believe that that particular place is the most desirable place to go to either. But for most of the work that I have experienced, we have a lot of entities that are just really kind of confused, and a lot of them just do not know that something bad happened to their body and that they are no longer viable. The most important thing to do is to pay attention to how it feels, how the energy feels. And if you're an intuitive and you come across this energy and you don't know how to help them cross over, my suggestion is to seek out someone who has this kind of experience, because not everyone is of the capacity to be able to do these crossing overs.
Now, Jackie, just let me add in there. It's like, Karen and I, we've both been at this for a long time, and I think we're both pre-TAPS investigators, and so we're a little bit more apt to believe in people with psychic ability. But I mean, I've literally met dozens of people who claim to have some kind of psychic ability, and they don't. How do you go about finding somebody who is legitimate, testing their abilities, and seeing if they have the skills to pay the bills?
Well, the first thing to do is to check about as much as you possibly can about their reputation.
Sure.
A lot of people want to jump in on that bandwagon and go, well, you know, I have a deck of cards, you know, tarot cards, and I have a pendulum, and all of a sudden I'm psychic. Yeah. And we giggle because we've seen these kinds of things happen. And
right.
A lot of times these people are trying to really, really, truly tap into this ability, and they are kind of trying to help the situation, but more times than not, they just make it more befuddling, and it doesn't help anyone. But mm-hmm. to understand if the individual is the proper one to do it, first of all, when you go into a home and they are of this particular religion background, mm-hmm. You have to kind of sort of work with what they're familiar with, because if you go
yes.
in with different techniques
right.
and all that, they're not going to understand. Like, say, if they're Catholic, I'm not going to go in and do a Native American ceremony.
Right.
I'm going to work with what they know.
Right.
I'm going to work with what they know. How do they know that this is working for them? Because they know their environment. They know the kinds of things that have been happening to the family members, if any of them have been bothered by this.
Sure.
They understand what their domicile feels like. And so using the techniques that they would use, prayer, holy water, holy oil, sometimes an anointing with the, what do I want to call that, where you burn like frankincense or myrrh or something of that sort, to be able to cleanse the home. And, you know, that's the biggest hurdle, to be able to make sure that you're in balance with them. And also understanding where they came from before the event happened. Then after you go ahead and you do the thing that you need to do to be able to clear out that space, you let it rest for a couple of days, and then you let them call you and you reevaluate.
Sure.
So first you got to really know what you're doing. You have to understand what the background is of the family. You've got to understand what the background of the situation is. Then you've got to address it as according to that particular situation, and you have to find a perfect fit. You also, like I said, you have to find someone that has a good standing reputation.
Sure.
And that's difficult to find.
Well, I think that's why a lot of people have a problem believing in psychic abilities, even people in the paranormal community, because let's face it, for every 10 freaks, flakes, and frauds that are out there, there's maybe one person that has a legitimate ability. And all those
right.
other, that 10 has given the rest of, you guys a bad name.
Yeah, we have to... I have to pick the kind of clients that I work with very carefully. I have to pick my associations very carefully. I've had an online presence for about 5 years now, and I've been approached just as recent as a couple of days ago from these companies that are like these online psychic places where you call and you pay $2.99 a minute.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, and all of that. And so, and because I've written a lot of articles and have a lot of experience at this, they're coming now out of what seems like the woodwork. And so you have to watch the kind of people that, you associate with. And hopefully for people that are running into these kinds of problems that they get online, and they mm-hmm. can look in... their local areas, and if they can find someone, and if they can't find them in that manner, hopefully from word of mouth. That is the most critical part of it, because when a person comes in and does work like this, you want to know that they're going to give you authentic information, and not just going willy-nilly and go, oh, there's a spirit here and I feel energy.
Right.
And make it either worse or make something out of nothing.
Right.
Correct.
And the other part, when I go in to a situation that I also have a member of my team that does forensic background work. And what he will do is he will go and assess the property from a physical standpoint to see if there are any physical reasons why things are going bump in the night. And then after we're finished with the physical assessment, then we go to the family and talk directly with the people in individual conversations so that other people that are in the family can't put more input in than what is needed, because we want it as close to the bone as possible. Mm-hmm. And so then, you know, and we, of course, ask critical questions such as, you know, is there any mental, is there any history of mental illness? Is there any medicines that they're on that may pose some sort of psychotic trip? You know, we really look at everything. And that's what you want when you, the audience, if you have a situation like that, you really need to have someone that comes in there and really a full assessment. That's part of the way that you know, also give you a good indicator whether or not the person is really legitimate or if they're just on a ghost hunt.
Sure. Right.
Now, do you come across many people like that? They're like, man, they are there for the thrill, and they're going to say and do whatever they take to get that thrill. Do you get that a lot?
We have. Well, I used to belong to a group in Warren, whose group name will be unmentioned. And a lot of them, yeah, they were in it just for the thrill, or they would take pictures. And a lot of times the pictures would just be like of dust or dust molecules and or bugs or, you know, things of that sort. Once in a while you run into something really, really like wow, amazing. But you know, I think a lot of times they treat it like it's a coffee club and for socialization, which is not a bad thing, but to, you know, if you're going to go on the evidence and what the evidence says, then a lot of that stuff is just, it's not evidence. It's just dust.
Right. Yeah. I hear you.
And you try not to be critical about it. You try to look at it with a democratic eye and help them, you know, show them what they're doing right and kind of like talk to them, kind of like sort of try to divert them from the more fluffier stuff. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't always work. And I've seen some groups actually that will get together and then there'll be so much infighting that they get crazy. No. It's like, okay, my technique is better than your technique. And then the ego gets in the way. When my crew go in to do a house or a property, we know, first of all, we leave the ego at the door.
Sure.
And we, each one of us has a particular thing we are very good at.
Right.
And so each one only is responsible for that thing that they're very good at.
Mm-hmm.
And then we don't have a problem with the ego thing.
Right.
See, you know, what I find interesting is you're talking about, you know, residential. With McHenry County Paranormal Research Group, the one that I'm with, that's what we do is mostly residentials. Now, what I'm trying to say is that, you know, you got shows like Most Haunted where they had Derek Acora and he's on and he's like, I feel this and see that. Now,
and then they train at every little tiny little thing. They go, what is it? And it's like, okay, you don't know why you're really there.
Right.
You're here to do an investigation. And why are you screeching or going, because they're on film. They're on camera.
I have to admit, I screamed like a girl once, but it started something.
I mean, everybody.
Yeah, something.
You know, if it's real, you know, you're going to, if it's startling and you're really like, oh, wow, you know, that's different. And the screech is different. The pitch and everything is different. But if constantly do it, it's kind of silly.
Yeah, it was only once. And they have it on tape and they play it for everybody and it's really
amazing.
Well, what I'm driving at is that you know you get guys like Derek Acora, they're on television and they're at Chillingham Castle. Okay, now he's like, I don't know anything about this place. All right, come on, Everybody knows what's at Chillingham Castle. It's been haunted for hundreds of years now. But so when I listen to that, it's like, that doesn't seem very genuine to me. However, when you do like a private residence, you can't really exactly go into the history, and it's not really well known. So, you know, when you go into these private residences and you bring up, you know, what's in the house and, you know, haunting it, and I say that in quotes, haunting, that carries a lot more weight with it.
Well, what happens, I did a house just recently, a couple of weeks ago. As a matter of fact, I wrote about it in my blog. And the topic was about demonology, but it's really an essay about the dark hole that you can go down if you open up a Ouija board or if you play with tarot cards. This lady that owns the house, she herself, when she was very young, she played with a Ouija board a couple of times, and they never closed it off the way they should have. And the father ended up taking it, and then it ended up in a landfill somewhere.
Sure.
But then when she had her own children, just recently, they opened up a Ouija board three times, and they did two with actual physical boards, and then one night a group of girls got together and they drew it on a piece of paper, and then there was they did some sort of a magical spell, was supposed to be lighthearted, that turned into something really, really darker than what they were hoping for. And the mom, she was walking by their room and she saw smoke. And so, of course, she's going to, you know, open the door because her children are in that room. Mm-hmm. And they were using a candle that was a soy candle. Soy candles don't smoke. No. And whatever it was that they were doing in there, it brought up a mist.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of like a real deep, heavy fog. And when the mother opened the door and turned the light on, the mist just immediately vanished. It was gone.
See, and you know, a lot of what I say to people when they're like, well, the Ouija board, you know, is the Ouija board dangerous? And I'm like, how dangerous could the Ouija board be? It says Parker Brothers on it. It's not the Ouija board, it's the intent behind it.
Right.
Did you agree?
Well, I have a thing about Ouija boards. I wish that all of them would just kind of like up and disintegrate, because I myself had an experience when I was very, very young and had no idea what the heck I was doing. Mm-hmm. And the planchette moved all by itself, and it was just me and that thing, and I knew there was nobody pushing it. I feel very strongly that boards, if used with proper intention, as you say, can be a very useful thing. Mm-hmm. However, if that person with that intention is using it as a purposeful, useful thing, then they should also know how to close it off.
Right.
And many times when these children get a hold of these boards, the boards don't want to close off. They want to stay. They want to stay open. And because it's
got
fun
a lot of energy
and
to them.
They have a lot, ton of energy, and they can really, really find themselves going down a rabbit hole that they just cannot get back from. And for the most part, if anyone has any idea of thinking about getting one of these things, you really, really better know what you're doing first.
Right.
Wouldn't you say the same thing about pendulums and dowsing rods and anything that's used for divination like that? If you don't know what you're doing, it's not...
But pendulums, I use a pendulum. As a matter of fact, I use a pendulum for dowsing for all sorts of things. When we're going into a home, I use a pendulum to show me where the energy is the most disturbed or the most dense, and or to use one when things are more balanced, and it does all kinds of really bizarre things sometimes. Sometimes the thing will spin like a helicopter blade. Other times it will just stand still, and the physicalness of using the pendulum, I don't believe is as harmful intuitively as a Ouija board or an angel board or something like that, because it has a it has a different kind of a balance to it, and it won't just activate on its own if it's not touched.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, wouldn't you agree that, you know, even ghost hunting in and of itself could be dangerous? Like, you see a lot on television, you know, you see these people walking into homes and they're like, you know, they're berating whatever spirits they are. I mean, we recently had a guest on this show a couple weeks ago who is now having severe problems in his own home because of you know, going after these things and being real aggressive with it. You know, I oftentimes tell people, it's like, pay very close attention to the man behind the curtain, because he can and will kick your ass.
Oh, yeah.
And I think that even just ghost hunting itself.
Well, you know, a lot of times what will happen is someone will come in and they'll just go, well, I know what I'm doing, and I want to go and research this, and I'm going to go find it. And then they'll go, and I saw a show, this was it was last year sometime, and it was on a most popular show. And this young man decided that he was going to go into this place that was known as Hell's Gate or something.
Why, I think that would be the same guest that Rick was just discussing. Go on.
That I was referencing,
oh,
please.
I am so, well, luckily I have very bad memory, so I don't remember what his name is or the name of the show. However, when he did that, I looked at my husband and I said, that man is a damn fool. Because you do not go into a place like that, especially where there is known activity, and start cursing the streak and yelling and screaming at it and going, you're not so bad, you can't come get me and all that, and not think that that thing is going to be sneaky and attach itself to you or attach it to something that you've got and come home, you know, in a pretty little package and sit in your home for a while until you don't remember it anymore, and then it will hello. Most
right.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. There's not much else to say about that.
Well, no, I mean, I agree with you. I think that you can provoke something without necessarily being, well, kind of a douchebag to it. You know what I'm saying?
I think I provoke just by being me, because I'm very open when I go into investigations. I get followed home. I get a lot of EVPs. I get a lot of evidence. I get touched a lot. But then I'm also, I don't get specific information like it sounds like you do, Jackie, but
what's so important, what I would like to really, really strongly suggest, though, to your listening audience, is to make sure that before you go into an investigation, you take everybody with you, and you say a prayer of protection, or you do whatever it is that you feel you need to spiritually prepare yourself. That's something, too, that is not really discussed too much. This preparation that you do on a spiritual level, because you are messing around much of the time in the spiritual playground. And you must walk in that light where you know that you've got to respect what's on the other side of that door. You can fear it, or you can embrace it, depending on, you know, what the situation is. But please don't go into a place like that and do something and try to provoke it. I've also asked people if they know that there are entities within the home. I tell them, first and foremost, do not engage.
Absolutely.
Don't speak to it.
We tell people that, too. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Don't get friendly with it. Right. This lady, the recent case that I did at the house, there was a young man, 19 years old, who was dating a 15-year-old girl in the home, and she didn't want to date him anymore. And he gave her a necklace that was given to him by his grandmother, and it had some scry on it. And she had put it on and wore it to bed. And that evening, she felt like she was being choked in her sleep. She woke up. She had hand marks on her that had the impressions on her neck that somebody was choking her from the front. And
Rick, just a sec, Jackie. Oh. Rick, look at what I just typed in the window.
Oh, in the Skype window?
Yeah. as you were talking about, just before she started talking about that, I typed heaviness in my throat. Weird.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
She was choked. And she woke up. Of course, she was screaming her little lungs out. Mm-hmm. Her little sister, 9 years old, woke up. She was living in the same room. She saw the marks on the girl's neck. And a few seconds later, she felt, the 16-year-old felt a burning sensation going down her spine. She mm-hmm. lifted her shirt. The 9-year-old took a look, and she went, oh, my God, there are scratch marks going down your spine. About less than a minute or so after, she not only had all of that, but she also had scratch marks going down her forearm.
Okay.
Now imagine you're the mom. And you come in and you see all the commotion going on and you see the marks and you're, and this is like 3 o'clock in the morning and you vacate your family, take them over to a safe house and, you call your, friend who calls me in the middle of the night and tells me what's going on. I ended up going back to that house 4 times. Now, the reason why I went back 4 times is because she did something I told her not to do. Mm. Once you consecrate a space, mm-hmm. and you make it into, we're just going to say God's house because they're Catholic, and everything that's inside it and surrounding it is sanctified, so to speak, and it will remain that way unless you let something come through the front door willingly.
Right.
Well, her 19-year-old person that was hanging with the 16-year-old, she let back through the front door because the 16-year-old had homecoming, and she didn't want to waste all the money that she put into the dress and the flowers and all that for her daughter. Now, mind you, her daughter didn't want to go with him, but mm-hmm. it ended out that this happened. Anyway, this 19-year-old not only had a fancy little necklace that he wanted to pass off, he also had a little friend named Tommy. And this little friend was an entity. And the little friend, for months before that, was invited into this person's home. And then one evening, after things got really, really hot and heavy screaming between the 16-year-old and the 19-year-old, little Tommy made an appearance without the 19-year-old. And that's when everything just started busting loose.
Now, what kind of entity was Tommy? Was this a human entity
Tommy,
or inhuman?
When the Tommy presented himself as a sweet, loving little 6-year-old little boy. Three girls in the house. Two of them could see him. One of them could only feel him. But the mom could feel the energy also. So she would embrace this energy and thought that it was okay until the 16-year-old no longer wanted to be with the 19-year-old anymore. And then when Tommy made an appearance, it first made an appearance in the 16-year-old's room, and she had a cross that was in a curio, and the cross was about 4 inches tall. It mm-hmm. spun around, fell face down. When that happened, as soon as it hit the glass in the curio cabinet, some of her drawers started opening and closing, and her bed started to shake. We got the whole thing. When I first heard about this, I'm like, oh, okay, yeah. So, and what I'm going to tell you, too, when I first went into the home after I had already spoke to with the people, and because they had vacated the business over to the grandmothers, I spoke to them before I went to the house.
Okay.
And so I get to the house, and I'm going to tell you, I opened up that door with my husband, and we're standing there, we're going, there's nothing going on in here. Not a dang thing. It felt fine. It felt like there was absolutely nothing in there until we started digging around. Mm-hmm. And we eventually found where the source was, and we cleared it out. And the third time, we also had a Monsignor from their church come in, and he basically, what I figured, put the icing on the cake and just, finished everything else off. And then we get another phone call, not even a week later, And it started up all over again, and that's when she told me that she had let this young man in to pick up her daughter. And he didn't even come in all the way. He came in, he was standing in like the foyer of their home. And I said, all he's got to do is just cross that front line. That's mm-hmm. it. And the mother was in the kitchen, and she just kind of felt like something was kind of odd. And so she came up to the front where he was, and she looked at him, and she says, you don't have anybody with you, do you? And he goes, oh, just my drama-making little buddy. And then he left and mm-hmm. took the 16-year-old with her. And she came back home that night, and that was when, again, she was scratched. Now this time she was scratched in front of a man, her stepfather, who didn't really believe. I mean, he knew something bad was happening, but he didn't believe it because he didn't see it. Sure. And I had told him one evening, I said, you know, he drove me home, and that was about an hour and a half back home ride. And I told him, I said, you know, the thing with you is that you're like Thomas, the doubting Thomas, and that you have to see it before you will believe it. And I looked at him and I said, I truly hope that that will never be the case, that you will never have to see something like that ever again. Right. And so about a week later, he's standing in the dining room, and the young girl had woke up again. She had her bed sheets pulled off, and the bed was starting to do some funky stuff. And she got up, she was screaming, she was crying, she felt the burning again down her spine and the scratches on her forearms, and he watched it as it happened.
That's phenomenal.
It was absolutely amazing, and this kind of thing doesn't happen. It's extremely rare. So for right. your listening audience, it's not right. something that happens, very common occurrence. And that's kind of sort of when I looked at it originally, I'm like, yeah, okay, well, let's just see what's really going on here. And let me tell you, when you first walk into that place, you wouldn't have known anything had happened at all, nothing. And yeah. I'm pretty seasoned at this. I've been doing this for the general public for 23 years. And since I was knee-high to a grasshopper for my family, I'm 46 now. I've been doing it a long time.
Yeah.
And I just thought it was just very unusual. But we stuck with it, and I'm glad we did. And she now no longer will allow anything, not a movie, not people, not anybody that has anything to do with any of this. But unfortunately, she had to learn the hard way, and she right. put her family at risk.
Right.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, people really just don't know what it is that they're dealing with. That's why I like to say that there are no experts on this side of life when it comes to the paranormal. You don't know what you're dealing with. I've been actively investigating for 20 years. I've dealt with two entities that I could say has never been human. And, you know, you see it on television a lot where it's like, man, they're dealing with a demon every week. It's like, wow, this place should be hell on earth by now, you know?
Yeah.
but it's TV. They need their ratings, you know?
Sure.
I just think, I mean, I have six children. Four mm-hmm. of my children, I know for a fact, do what I do. As a matter of fact, they've come on some investigations with us and to get their feet wet, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
And, we have had, situations where I know that the energy is way too heavy for them. I won't allow them to come in. But most of the time, it's just, it's pretty benign. People that are lost, they don't understand that they're dead. And, you know, creating a pathway so that they can just move along. Some actually, in our family, for whatever reason, they do hang around. So I understand what you're talking about when it comes to let them stay, you know, until they figure out, you know, why they're there. Mm-hmm. We had a little girl, as a matter of fact, that was so strong of a presence within our family for many years that we actually, when we sat down to eat, we would put a plate out and we would put some food on the plate for her. Mm-hmm. We did that. One evening we were sitting down and we were having dinner, and then the chandelier started doing a little shimmy. And I'm like, what the heck's going on? And one of the children looked over and says, oh, that's Rachel. And I'm like, you know, well, we're sitting here having dinner. The most obvious thing to me is, well, maybe we should just set a plate for her.
Sure.
And we did, yeah. And it stopped. And well, so we, you know.
But maybe those spirits, the ones that you don't move on, are the ones. I mean, you know, if I would think if a spirit doesn't want to move on, nothing you do is going to make it go.
Exactly. And I think that's like with anybody. The last thing, you know, I was talking to my father-in-law about this earlier, about, you know, getting rid of spirits and stuff. My in-laws know what I do, and, you know, they like it. And they think it's very interesting. And I was talking to him. It's like the last thing you want is, you know, you're kicking it in your front room.
Get out of bed and get dressed.
Excuse me? Oh, I'm sorry. Well, I was talking to him that the, you know, last thing you want, you're in your house kicking it, drinking a beer, watching the ball game. You know, you don't want to, like, a bunch of guys coming in, you know, telling you, hey, you need to get out. It's your house, it's your space, even if you're not still alive. So
right.
It's very disingenuous to say, well, I can get rid of these things. Well, they're not going to go if they don't want to go. That's all there is to it. I've dealt with many spirits like that.
Right. Well, then that's the time to get somebody in there that knows what they're doing to get them out. Because they don't have a right to invade a space of a viable human being and make their life interesting.
But what about those entities that are just, you know, they're nice, you know, the sweet little grandmotherly type? What about those?
The energy, what I was trying to get at with Rachel, the entity that was with our family for very long, many years, if they're not causing any malicious intent, if they're not mm-hmm. tipping things over, knocking things around, and scaring the heck out of your kids, or what? Because I go postal, I go definitive spiritual warrior. If anything bothers my children,
yeah.
But if they don't, you know, if they mind their own business and they're not causing any trouble and it's okay with you, you know, they're there and they know all that. Fine, it's not a major big deal, but. The big thing here that I'm most adamant about is if they are invading your space and they are causing you to have horrific dreams, or they're showing up, they're scaring the heck out of you, and they're doing things to your children, or they're making your life imbalanced, then that's the time to call somebody and get something done about it.
Sure. You know, Jackie, we're running up to the top of the hour. What we're going to do is we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we want to talk a little bit more about how it is you get rid of these things. So, Cheryl, yeah, we could talk a little bit more about that and a little bit more about your abilities, because I'd like to know when it is that you first realized that you had this. So what we're going to do is we're going to take a quick break. And this is Paranormal Underground Radio at ztalkradio.com. And you're listening to Jackie Chin, Psychic Medium. Come on back.
What's up? This is the Black Eyed Peas, and we're here for RAD, recording artists, actors, and athletes against drunk driving. Music is one of the most important things in our lives, but nothing is more important than life itself. So when you drink and drive, you're risking the life of yourself and the lives of everybody on the road. Don't plan to drive, just plan ahead.
A public service message brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, RAD, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
Hi, it's John here from Haunted Cornwall FM in the UK. We will be on Z-Talk now on a Sunday afternoon from 3 till 5 Eastern. We do talk all about the paranormal. Doesn't matter what it is, as long as it's paranormal. Audience are invited to get involved. If you've got questions, ask, because we've got a superb team that will be able to answer them. We don't sensationalize, we just tell the truth. However, if we find out there are fakes about, we will name and shame them. You've got to listen in to Haunted Cornwall FM from the UK on Z-Talk, 3 till 5 Eastern.
This is Dave from the Dave Matthews Band for RAD. When you go out and party, get drunk, then drive, you're not only loaded, you're a loaded weapon. When you celebrate, designate. Choose a designated driver. Remember, music lives and so should you.
A public service message brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, RAD, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
Your assignment is to listen to The Buzz on Monday nights from 8 to 10 p.m. Central on ztalkradio.com. This message will self-destruct.
Z-Talk Radio Network.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Paranormal Underground Radio on Z-Talk Radio. We're talking with Jackie Chin. She is a psychic medium. Jackie, at the as we were getting ready to come on the air, I was asking you a question. You were describing something to me. You were describing a woman to me that you were picking up when I asked you who threw the book at us at the museum. So I wanted to know if you could roll with that anymore, or if that energy has passed.
When I see the energy, sometimes that comes in like 20, 30 seconds and splits, it goes away. But when you were talking about the book being thrown, I saw this lady who seemed to be in like period clothing of around the 1800s. And she has a really, really long, like a sleeping gown on. And it could have been attached to something that was around the site where you were, or it could have been just something that, because we're having now more higher vibration, a lot of people talk about veils and things of that sort, or different layers of energy. The energy has become a lot less denser now, especially since we're moving into this new era of time, and it could have been something that just kind of bled through. Okay. So,
it's actually consistent with what someone who I know to be psychic has seen associated with that museum. The location is a museum, and he's seen it that woman, the tall, thin, period
woman. Yeah, she's
woman.
Very tall, and yes. She's got long, dark hair, and it's very flowing, and she just looks like she's about ready to get into bed because she's got this really, really long, what I would assume is a sleeping gown. And she's not, it doesn't feel like it's angry energy, just kind of like, you know, hey, just kind of, you know, leave me alone.
Mm-hmm. Now, yeah. You know, Jackie, how does this come to you? How do you know this?
Jeez. How do I know this? Well, you were asking me when you thought that, when I thought that I started feeling the energy, and for... When I was about 5 years old, I started seeing what I thought was like Casper the Friendly Ghost. Remember that show a long time ago from people that are in our era? But what was actually happening is was that I was actually seeing entities. And I wasn't scared because I was so fond of that show that I thought, oh, this is really kind of cool. And then, but All right, so how do I know that I'm getting information from another source and it's not from my imagination and that I'm not crazy?
Okay.
You get when I sit down and I have conversation with somebody and they've come to me and they've got a couple of questions and I start talking to them, I start pulling out information, and it's from something that I call an event horizon. An event mm-hmm. horizon is the source of an energy, and it could be a real high energy, like extreme excitement, or it could be extreme anger or sadness, but it has to have an emotional boom to it.
Right.
And I don't know anything about their past. Most of the clients I have never met before, I don't know anything about them. And there's no, you know, get online really quick right before, 5 minutes before, you know, a reading and go, I found out everything about you and now I can do this.
Sure.
So, and when I start talking to them, after they ask me the initial question, I get to bounce back into their past, and I look at the situation for what it is right then and there. And as we know, everything is connected to everything else.
Mm-hmm.
And so as the energy moves, it kind of like bounces me off like a springboard. And then I can start to move forward, and because I've tapped into that we call it their spiritual pool.
Mm-hmm.
And then when they ask questions and it makes sense to them, when I do a reading, I always ask very specific questions. I don't do general readings because I think that there's too much fluff to it. And just like when you're going into a place that is purported to be haunted, you're going to do a little research on the place, but for the most part, you want to kind of sort of go in blind because you don't want to have information given to you that's going to skew what you find.
Right.
Right.
And that's another, that's, you know, when I work with clients, I tell them I don't want to know any specifics. I just want to know what the subject matter is and what the direct question is.
Okay.
That way, and that's another way that people can tell. If a person is really good, let me tell you, they're going to be really mostly spot on, but they will hit that event horizon where that energy starts from, and let them work it. Don't feed them any information. Don't give them any body clues. A lot of the work that I do is online, and so I don't get those emotional body clues, and I like that. It also works really well when I work with skeptics.
Mm-hmm.
I was recently interviewed for a book by a terrific lady friend. Her name is Gail Kushner. She lives in Tucson, Arizona. And she started this book project in October of 2010. And her published date is October 5th, 2011. It's called her My Psychic Search. And when she went to go and interview me, I had a 10-page interview. It was the only one that she had interviewed that was online, and
okay.
It took me forever to do. And she asked me all kinds of questions, and one particular question is she wanted to know when I started to mature in my abilities. So I answered her like this. I had an idea that something was very different about me when I was 11 years old. I had a friend who I used to hang out with at my middle school. And before school, we would take a deck of cards, and we would guess the color. Eventually, we started guessing the suit and the number of each card, and we became extremely connected. One point where I think we kind of scared each other, though, is mm-hmm. we were sitting in an auditorium. I was sitting up the front. He was sitting in the back. And I thought, I wonder if, like Tony and Tia off of that movie from Escape from Witch Mountain, if that actually worked, that ability to do mental telepathy. So I kept saying his name over and over and over in my head. Well, mm-hmm. about the fifth or sixth time I said it, he stands up and goes, "What do you want?" And I went, "Oh, my goodness, it worked." And it never happened again.
Okay.
But I used to get that, I would hear my mother, and if she wanted me to do something, or if she was concerned about me, or if she was really ticked off at me, that seemed to be when it came in the most. And I would actually hear her through what I would like to think is auditory, but I don't believe it was, it wasn't auditory like we know it, like to say somebody's standing right next to you and you're listening to them. It mm-hmm. was auditory where I heard it in my head.
Okay. Now, Jackie, we have a question from the chat room, and I think it's a really good question. It comes from Ghostbreakers in the chat room, who is Kim Kowalczyk. He's a real friend of the show. His question is, if you are asked to check on a spirit at a location and you don't find one, if you don't find one, how do you tell the people that there are no spirits there when, you know, they have believed that there is?
Yes. Okay, so this is what I do. Remember when I was talking about the pendulum? When I go through a property, initially what I will do is I will tell them, I'm not going to talk, I'm not going to say anything, I'm just going to point. And we will go, and the person that actually lives there the most or works there the most will follow right behind me. And they will watch as I'm pointing to different areas. And after I'm finished with the initial assessment of going through with the pendulum, and they can watch the pendulum, if it moves, it doesn't move, if it's doing some really weird whirly gig or going back and forth a lot. When it starts to do that, it starts to make really large movements. The next thing I will do is I will say, show me. And when I say, show me, it will point to the direction where I need to go. And so, because that person knows, I've never been through that property before, and they know where the energy is occurring for them the most, it is a, it's kind of like a backup that lets them know, hey, yeah, something that I'm feeling here, something is happening. But if it doesn't turn up on that initial time and they say that they still feel something there, I will have somebody else go and do an assessment. Because I, even though I've been doing it since I was knee-high to a grasshopper, I don't have the ego that says I am end-all, be-all. Because sometimes the energy will bury itself someplace. And I won't be able to pick it up. It's rare. It happens. And like I said, leave ego at the door. Okay. So I have other people that I know are sensitive that I've either trained or that I know are specific to that particular situation. And I will let them go through and make an assessment. And if we come up a big fat zero on, we try at least three, four assessments. Mm-hmm. If I come up a big fat zero on all four of them, then we start looking really more at the forensic side and see if there's something that is causing it, like electromagnetic static, or if there's some kind of weird thing with the water or something inside it that is causing it physically. So that's how we make sure we have backups, and we really, really rely on the people that we're working with too.
Sure.
Sometimes it just doesn't have the right vibration. Sometimes it's the timing, but I don't believe either to that energy only stays only like during the night. A lot of times people will notice it more at night because it's more quiet and things are more apt to be known at night. But let me tell you, if there's energy in a place, it will be there during the day or at night.
Right. Jackie, from our chat room, we have another question. This is from, in our chat room, she's Daphne, but in the group that I work with, she's one of our mediums, and she's pretty awesome. Her question is, do you ever feel the thicker, more problematic areas without the pendulum, or is this something that you routinely use?
Yes, and I have a story for you that happened a few weeks ago. I frequent a coffee house here in town, and I've been going there for years, and I've never had any kind of problem there, and it's very nice and has a lot of nice activity, and it's just, it's nice. It feels like warm bath water, you know, and that's why I go. Okay. And one evening, it was about 7:45. The place was going to close around 9:00. It was about 7:45, and I'm sitting there, and I'm writing an article, and all of a sudden, I felt from the right side of my body, energy body, my personal inside energy body, being pulled. I'm telling you, never, ever felt anything like this. Never want to feel it again. It kept pulling on me, and it doesn't want to let me talk about it either. Sometimes my voice will go like that.
Okay.
All right.
No problem.
So it'll pull, and it felt like a black blanket. And this energy started coming up from my right side, like I said, and it started going around and enveloping me up until, like, my forehead. And when it got around to that point, I'm like, heck no, this is crazy. I got on the phone. The only thing that I could think of was calling my husband. Let me tell you, this energy, if you ever feel this, it mm-hmm. will make you forget that you know anything about the light. It will make you forget that you have the ability to push it away. It will take all of that and just erase it. And I don't know how it does, but it does. And so I gathered up my stuff, and I went to the foyer of the building. And as soon as I got about 20 feet away from where the table was, and it started to, like, pull away, so, like, retract. And I got in, like I said, to the foyer, and I started feeling somewhat better. My husband came and picked me up. I had a breakdown for 2.5 hours.
Sure.
Now, I'm a seasoned veteran. I have felt demons, and I have felt other, you know, stray energies and stuff like that. Never, ever felt anything like that before. So the next day, I went in, and I talked to the manager, who he's Greek Orthodox. And the church, his church is right next door to this coffee house that I attend. And I told him, I said, you know, I have never said anything to you ever about any of this. He knows what I do. He knows I come in there and write a book, and I do some readings and stuff like that inside the building. But I've never come to him and said, we've got a problem here. And I told him specifically what time it was. And I also said, you know, you got all these cameras going on. Mm-hmm. I want you to check the cameras. He goes, well, what would I look for? I said, you would look for light flashes, shadows, movement of any kind that is out of the ordinary.
Right.
So he went, he checked the tape, and it was digital, and mm-hmm. This is important here. He said he didn't find anything like that, but he did find something that was rather odd. He found 20 seconds of missing time.
Okay.
The clock went from 101 to 121 right at the moment that whatever the heck it was, happened.
Okay. See, now I think
it's... Oh, yeah. I do a lot of work, a lot of sensitive work without the tools. And one thing I want to really stress here is that these tools, these cards and the pendulums and the dowsing, they don't make you psychic. They extend... They're an extension of what you do. So if you're sensitive, you'll be able to do that. But I do have a couple of friends of mine who are highly sensitive and can't use a pendulum for nothing.
Hold on a second, Jake. Look.
It stands still. It doesn't do a thing. But they're spot on with their information, and they can. They're clairvoyant. They're highly clairvoyant, and they're clairvoyant too. They can hear. And they with a pendulum though, and so it's kind of like a running joke. I mean, I can make one. I could put like a little needle on a string, and it will go and do what I need it to do. But they, I mean, and it doesn't matter what kind it is, because they bought like 20 of them, and they're pretty and all that kind of thing. But they thought, well, maybe if I try this kind or that kind, it just doesn't work for them. So I frequently go over and I borrow them and use them for what I need. That's something that I also highly stress. The tools don't make you psychic. They just bring out more of what you got.
Right.
I have a couple questions for you. Well, actually, no, sure. I'm just going to ask one question. But do you think that every human being is born with, some kind of degree of sensitivity to the spirit realm?
Yes. Okay. Absolutely. Because the reason being is because I believe that we all come from the same source. We might not travel the same path, and the things that we do might not look the same as somebody else's, but we all come from that initial source of light. And I believe, too, that when we're very little, we need all the protection that we can possibly get, especially in the spiritual realm. and especially with these new children that are coming out since like 96, 97, there's a whole group of children that they just seem to really be able to take to this really, really easy. And so I do believe that absolutely. Parents really, really, especially from the 50s and 60s, if they've got children that are now and they're having issues, a lot of times these parents are very scared because they've been taught by either their church or family members, you don't do this because if you do this, then that's the devil's work.
Right. I still get that from my mom, and I'm 37 years old.
It's imperative that these children are now coming and seeing things that are future events that are they're etched in their mind from, and it seems like it's from birth. It's etched in their mind. Please pay attention to what they have to say. And let me tell you, some of these kids are going to tell you some stuff that's going to rock your socks off. Best thing that you can do when you hear something like that is say, can I have a moment? You know, I'd like to go and have a cigarette. I'd like to go to the bathroom. I need to blow my nose, something. Get yourself so that you can compose yourself and go finish the conversation. That is imperative. We must finish the conversation. No matter what level you're at, just listen to them. Because if you go and you ignore them, or you make fun of them, or you just scare the bejesus out of them, that's not going to be useful.
Right.
See, it'll
cause problems down the road.
Yeah, now my son is at the age, he's 15, he was born in 1996, and he's sensitive, but he's at the age now where, and I've always been very receptive to it and willing to talk to him about it and that type of thing, where it's not cool right now, because he's 15 and he's in high school, and that's just not what you do.
I have a 12-year-old like that.
Yeah, and so that doesn't mean he's not sensitive. It means he just doesn't want to deal with that crap right now.
You know, the reason, a big part of that is peer pressure. And my daughter, we tell them this stuff is very special and unique to you. It is part of who you are, and it is a normal thing. But not all people will understand this, especially young children. And my 12-year-old, unfortunately, she had an experience where she was passing a bathroom, and she heard a young girl crying, and this was a viable young girl. And she found her in like a fetal position in one of the stalls, and she went in and she asked her what was going on and why she was crying, and all the girl could do was point. And so when she pointed, and my daughter looked up, she saw the aberration or entity source that the girl was screaming about, and she said, "Oh, you mean, you know, you're looking at this young boy?" And the girl she shook her head. She's still crying. She's really upset. And the girl finally said, "You can see him too." And she said, "Yeah." And so she managed to pick the girl up, and she walked her out of the bathroom. She got her all, so she was feeling, kind of better, because I guess the girl was just initially scared.
Sure.
And about 3 or 4 days later, that same girl went and started blabbing to other children about what Catherine did, not mentioning anything about the fact that she was terrified in a fetal position in the bathroom, but that Catherine could see dead people.
Right.
You know, I want to talk. Oh, please finish your story. I'm sorry, I keep interrupting you.
It's okay. Go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. Now, I did want to kind of talk to you a little bit about that, since we're talking about the new children. I've been told by several different people that my little guy, he's going to be a year old in a couple of weeks or a few weeks, that he's one of these crystal children. And I've had people tell me that, you know, I'm an indigo. Can you explain this a little bit? And how is it that you, and how do you detect these kind of abilities in these children?
So I'm not going to go in, I don't do a whole lot about talking about indigo and different kinds of names that they put on these children.
Labels?
Mm-hmm. Let me not put myself on the higher ground of all of this and say I never label. I do. Yeah. But in this particular situation, I don't put the label there because it sounds always like they're trying to one-up.
Sure.
Yeah. And you gotta let the kids be who they are without a label.
Right. So what is happening with these children is that they are basically, think about them as they are beacons of light. And they're really, really, I mean, they're, first they're pure, they're from source, and they're new, they don't have any of this baggage going on and all of this other stuff. And so they're like little beacons of light. And because of all of the prayer that has gone on the planet beforehand, from all the different kinds of religions that are trying to raise the vibration of the earth, these mm-hmm. children that are coming in are no longer, like, say, starting at ground zero on Earth plane and having to move up. Because of all of that stuff that's gone on before, maybe they're about 20 steps up, where when a lot of us were born, we were, like, 20 steps down and on the ground level.
Mm-hmm.
So because of that, they're able to come in and they're able to do more than what we were able to. Expect this. If you are a parent, if you are pregnant right now, your child is just going to be like that.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to come natural to them. And so I am thinking that the reason why they have told you this is maybe hopefully to prepare you so that you don't get surprised.
Okay.
All right.
And that's all. I'm going to leave that at that.
Okay.
Okay. Very good then.
All right. So, Cheryl, do we need to take one more break before the last segment?
No, we don't need to.
Oh, okay. this is usually break time, so I was making sure.
Yeah.
All right.
So, again, when we're working on with the children, if your child comes home to you and says that they see, hear, feel someone around them that they makes them feel uneasy, mm-hmm. or that they really don't automatically think, you know, don't automatically think that it's just their imagination. Take mental notes of what the child sees. If they're speaking to them, do they seem agitated, or are they extremely, really excited? And for those parents who are just sitting on the fence with all of this psychic stuff, it's not to prove one way or the other, but to help balance the child as much as possible.
Sure.
A lot of times when there's like if they imagine something, that imagination can stretch a long way, and you can see that it kind of sort of really goes out into the realm of purple elephants wearing tutus. But if they're coming to you and they're explaining that I see this particular person and this person is dressed like this and they're saying these things, and, it could be Aunt May, or it could be an entity that is trying to poke at the child. Now, I talked a little bit earlier about these veils that are lifting.
Okay.
I don't get a lot into the 2012 hoorah of all of that. My big thing is
the zombie apocalypse right before Christmas?
Well, yeah, that's all fun and games and all that. But what I'm looking at here is I look at patterns. And part of the pattern that I'm seeing is this pattern of 11-11. And for a lot of sensitive people, they've been seeing this number, some of them for decades. Sure. I started seeing it a couple of years ago.
It's
now,
tomorrow.
It is tomorrow, and it's very appropriate to speak on such matters. What I'm asking for people to do is to make mental notes of their ability. It may appear that their ability has kind of gotten a bump up by quite some many numbers, 4 or 5 levels. You're going to notice, perhaps, and you may yourself have noticed, that right before major events like earthquakes or tsunamis or something like that, you kind of get that dizzy sick feeling in your stomach where you feel like you're on a boat. And
I actually know they're going to happen. Right. I actually can say earthquake and train derailments for some reason.
Right. So it's because your body is very in tune to what is going on the planet. The planet is a living, breathing thing. And we are all made out of that same, you know, what you find in the ground, we've got minerals that are in our body.
Right.
So think on this. You're basically a tuning fork for vibrations on the earth. Pay attention to these vibrations. A lot of people that I have encountered, and myself included, right before events that are that big, I could be standing still looking at a book, and my body starts going like a pendulum.
Okay.
In a clockwise motion, or my body will start to want to rock back and forth, and I will get an immense wave of sick feeling. And it's because the vibration is going so fast that everything kind of gets shook up. So I know to pay attention.
Sure.
Another thing to pay attention to your animals, pay attention to your children. A lot of times because they're so much more sensitive to things, they will pop off with, I feel like the land is shaking, or I feel like I'm twisting. Pay attention to that kind of thing. Just be very aware and do your utmost best, even as silly as it sounds, to make a mental note of it.
Well, you know, that's interesting because I'm sorry, my husband's driving up and I have four dogs, so you're going to hear them. Sorry about that. I have all day, I've had this feeling that I can't place, but that something is coming. And I didn't tie it into 11/11 because I don't give a lot of credence to numbers, other than that it's like my son's birthday or my husband's birthday tomorrow. I mean, you know, and it's Veterans Day and all of that. But all day long, I've been thinking something's going to change. So, Cheryl wants to know if bed shaking means anything.
If bed shaking?
Yeah, Cheryl experiences. Cheryl, why don't you pop on and ask her about that? Because this is your experience.
Yeah, please.
Oh, well, I was just curious if that does that predict anything if you awaken to your bed shaking, or is that just...
Keeping in mind that she lives in Fullerton, California.
Yeah, it's Southern California. Don't you guys get like 500,000 times every day?
Yeah, no.
But I think she's kind of sort of speaking about specific kind of situations. Right. Is it happening at a particular time of the evening? Pay attention to that.
Yeah.
Okay? Pay attention to what you're thinking about right before, because that sometimes can influence. Pay attention to what your immediate afterthought is. Is it a fear, or is it of something that's kind of like, okay, this is just a heads up, or is this a real warning? Pay attention to also how your body is reacting to it. If you have that sensation, what you can do is you can actually get on the floor after that sensation finishes, and you can actually use your body as a pendulum.
Oh, interesting.
Stand your body very still.
Okay. And yourself on the spring. No. Sorry.
what you do is when your body's very still, you say, show me yes. And your body should start making a forward motion that's kind of like a forward rocking motion, really, real gentle. And then you'll go, show me no. And most times what I found when they say show me no is your body will want to pull itself back a little bit. Not that you're off balance, but just back a little bit.
Oh, okay.
And so for you, in being able to figure out whether or not that shaking is something that you need to be concerned about, if it's something that's not good, you use your body as I told you. And if it pushes forward, then you know you need to pay more close attention to the next 24 hours.
Okay.
If it goes backward, then maybe not so much. Maybe it's just something that is going on that's you're having a some sort of a mental issue, and it's just kind of coming out like this. Like some people get tics. Maybe your thing is the bed shakes.
That could be.
Yeah, because we, I mean, and you understand about auras and vibrational energy from the body, right?
Yeah, my mom and sister claim that they could actually see auras. I've never been able to. They said they could actually physically with their eyes see auras around people.
And that's an amazing ability to have. My 12-year-old, my girl, has that ability. She can look and go, yeah, it's good, no, it's not so good.
Yeah.
It's very valuable when you have energy that's within the home that seems to be shaking things up. Mm-hmm. And so after I go in and I go to war, so to speak, I will have her come up and I'll say, okay, what color is the room? If the room is really balanced, it's either a very light blue or a purple.
Mm-hmm.
If it's not balanced, then it's kind of like the slimy green, brownish colors.
Mm.
And it seems to be a real good indicator for her to know. Another thing, too, something very, very simple that people can do is get some lavender oil and get a little spray bottle. It doesn't have to be gigundous, something small you can have in your room. Put about 4 drops of lavender oil into the water. Shake it up really good. If you have a couple of small amethysts, you can put that in the water too. It's not necessary.
Oh, okay.
And spray the room.
Oh,
and
interesting.
It tends to make the vibration not as dense. It lightens things up, so to speak.
I'd
not
like to
only
try
it
that.
Smells good and all that, but it. It's very useful, especially for the children. Helps calm their nerve, and it also is very effective on keeping balance within the room that they're sleeping in.
Well, that's really interesting. I've never heard of that, but I do want to try that.
I have a question about dousing rods. Now,
well,
I have
yes.
never, ever had a dousing rod in my hand until this past weekend. And we actually, I was holding these dousing rods and we would say spin and they'd spin. We would say point to somebody and they would point to somebody. What the hell was that?
It's just like using the pendulum. Apparently you can, if you can use a dousing rod like that, I'm sure you can use a pendulum too. What is that? All right, so a lot of people think that, oh, it's just your physical body and your mental body and all that and your energy within your body making the thing go.
Right, the ideomotor response.
Yeah, but let me tell you, when you can go and take, try this. This would be cool for you to do. You got a cell phone, right?
Yep.
Okay, so you take your rods and you have somebody you can take this. Have them hold the cell phone and see how close you get to their body before the rods cross.
Okay.
I guarantee you will get within less than 8 feet of their body.
Okay.
Okay.
Now what you do is you have them hold a piece of clear quartz or rose quartz or some kind of quartz.
Okay.
Selenite will probably work, but the quartz is more, it's more bam for your buck, so to speak. You have them hold it for a couple of minutes, and then you do the same thing. You start to walk in towards them, see how close you get. I guarantee it will be double the amount that you got the first time.
So you get closer to the cell phone than you do to the cords. Is that what you're saying?
Oh, yes. Because that that has a lot to do also with the energy of the individual that's holding the little rods.
Right.
I took a 3-hour seminar in divining with the rods, pendulums, all this other kind of thing. And you can even do it with water. It's simply amazing. But it's an extension. Like I keep saying, these are tools. These are extensions of what we are. And if you've got a profound energy about you, you're going to be able to do amazing things with those things.
Yeah, these things were pretty. Wow. I just picked them up and they were spinning like crazy. And I kept trying to make them stop. And the only time they would stop is if I said, stop. And then, but then there was this other woman there, and she's like this artist, and she's not really interested in the paranormal much or anything, but she picked up those rods, and those things went so fast. They spun like three times as fast as they spun when I took them. It was really strange.
Just because an individual does not have the desire to be able to do it doesn't mean they can't.
Right.
And there are a lot of people who have a huge desire and just really shouldn't be bothering with it. But so you got to find that balance. She may at one point find that technique very useful.
Yeah. Well, I had never ever considered getting dowsing rods before, but this was just so darn fascinating that now I'm considering just buying a pair because it was so interesting to see how they reacted to me.
I would enjoy writing an article about what I learned in that 3-hour seminar because it was fascinating to see, and it also teaches you a lot about how crystals work and how they aid your energy, bring up your vibrational level. She eventually took the crystals and put them in her pocket and held the cell phone, and she was still able to get the same benefit. So, you know, if you're like me and you got a cell phone on you and all that, because I, you know, with clients and my family and everything else, I need it. And I don't fancy carrying a purse too much. So I make sure that I have at least a clear quartz on me. And it doesn't have to be huge. It, you know, the size of a dime up to about a quarter is good enough, just something that's comfortable in there. And you'll notice a difference.
Okay.
Right.
See, I've always been drawn to lapis. So whenever I see like the crystals or the stones, I'm always like going after the lapis because I think it's so pretty.
Well, it's beautiful. It's calming. It's helps the body to become more centered. And it's a beautiful stone. It's something good to meditate with, and if that's what you're drawn to. And two, I should probably also reiterate that if you find a stone that you feel is just really, you really feel strongly about it, and you can fit it in your pocket, it's beneficial too. For some reason, your body needs that at that time.
Right. Right. So we haven't talked a lot about the Reiki yet, but this seems like
That's what I was going to ask about.
Oh, okay. This seems like a good transition to, it's pronounced Reiki, right? Is it Reiki?
Reiki. Yeah. Like ray from the sun and ki you put in your car.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. So, explain Reiki.
Oh my goodness. Okay. So, Reiki is a technique that was, discovered by a monk, a Buddhist monk. His name was Miyoko Usui.
Outstanding. And, I'm Buddhist, so I like that.
Yeah.
That's great.
I became Pure Land Buddhist in 97. I learned about Reiki kind of sort of the hard way. I was in a major car accident. I lost the use of my legs for about 3 months.
Okay.
And there was a lot, the nerve bundle at the base of my spine wasn't smashed, but it really felt like it. If I put a toe on the ground, I felt every little fiber. So I had a lady friend of mine, her name is Gail, and she would come over and she would do Reiki on me. And it's hands-on healing. People a lot of times associate it with what Christ did in healing with people. I believe that this particular energy comes from the divine, and I don't care what you name it, it's all the same thing. You go and basically it immerses your body and it makes you feel like you're in a warm bath, and it gets your body so that it's not all jumbled up and running around. It helps you center yourself, and it helps you become more able to cope with especially immense pain. Now, the reason why I did Reiki instead of pills, and I did do chiropractic for a while, but instead of the pills, is I was 4 months pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
And they couldn't even do so much. They couldn't do an ultrasound. They couldn't do anything because it would jeopardize, you know, the fetus. So, and I mean, I have a high tolerance for pain, but what I felt there was way beyond anything that I could really mentally focus on to be able to even get through my day.
Sure.
So learning how to do the Reiki, she had told me that I could, you know, get the benefits of it if she taught me how to do it, and then she wouldn't have to go back and forth so much because she had a pretty good drive just to get to me, and she was coming out 3 or 4 times a week sometimes. And so she taught me how to do it, and I basically got a crash course in a weekend from first level to third level.
Okay.
Now, before the accident, I was always able to generate a lot of heat from my hands, and from the source of it, it's directed from the very center of your palm. The center of your palm in Asian culture is called the hara, and there's also another term for it, but it escapes me right now. But that's where the energy seems to emit from. And what happens with there are symbols that are placed in you, and there's breathing techniques, and there is meditation that that you go through, and you work on yourself. That first level is all about you. It's all about cleansing. It's all about doing emotional healing and restructuring. And during that first level, you're not supposed to work on anybody else other than yourself. Then the second level is you start to work with people that are like, you know, family, friends, people that you're close with, and you work with a mentor as you're going through this, and you're shown different kinds of techniques. Now, if you're very sensitive and you're doing meditative work, sometimes you will see different kinds of symbols. Sometimes you will get your own feel for the energy itself. Just like mm-hmm. everything else, there is variations of the technique. All basically same source, but just variations. And so what is comfortable for you. And then by the time you're ready to be able to teach this, you will hopefully have had a number of years going through. I worked at a hospice clinic for AIDS for 6 months. I worked hospice for children. And I've also I worked for hospice in a specific individual case for an adult. And it is an amazing technique. It helps people prepare for the next stage of their life. And I know that might sound weird to some people, but death I view as another form of your life, another phase. And so it helps them to move progressively from one point to another. It also helps to alleviate pain and stress. I've seen in a number of cases where the doses of medication had been lowered. We've also had nurses and hospice care workers who had never seen anything like that go, you know, we really don't want you touching these people. But after they see, because we can only come in if we're invited by the family. And what I have asked them to do is take temperature, take all of the readings that you need to, blood pressure, all of that, aspiration levels and different kinds of things that they can monitor. Take a monitor of that before I do the work. Then I want you to, after about 20 minutes, I want you to take another set of readings. And sometimes all you got to do is just look at the faces of these care workers and the initial shock of this can't be, but it is amazing. It helps to it also helps for the family members to feel like they're doing something.
Okay.
Because a lot of times in situations like this, they feel utterly helpless.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, let me ask you this, Jackie, and it's going to be very direct. Okay.
Sure.
We've dealt with a lot. We're kind of like you know winding down the show here. But and there is one question that I have for you. A lot of people would say that. Well, no. First off, we've talked about a wide variety of very very spiritual issues here. What do you say to people? And I think they're very cynical. what do you say to people that, like, though, this is just a bunch of new age gobbledygook? What do you say to people like that?
You know, when I look at a skeptic or a person that goes, you know, with this line of thinking, my first thing is, I'm not going to say anything to this person that's going to change their mind. They have to see it. They have to feel it. I worked with an atheist. I was actually at an expo in Cleveland, and this person, they had some knee pain, and we were walking on concrete floor because it's an expo center. And they had walked by about 3 or 4 times because they were looking at different kinds of things. And finally, they came by, and I had a booth, and we were discussing about Reiki because I had written a book back in 2004 about the subject. And I said, you know, you may or may not have any kind of a belief system about this, but it's not about belief. It's about doing. And they sat down, and I worked on them for about 5 minutes, and the expression on their face as it was happening, and they could feel that warmth coming through, and the muscles starting to loosen up, and that pain start to dissipate, that's where you get them. That's where they look, and they kind of like, they might not be actually, they're not atheist, and I didn't know they were an atheist until after they said, you know, I'm an atheist, and I never believed in any of that stuff, and I think I might have to look a little bit more into this, because I've had this knee pain for 20 years or so. It's not about talking. It's not about, like, you know, when we're doing groups with going into different places, it's not about the ego.
Right.
Because, you know, if you look at it like, you know, you're not the one that is responsible for that particular healing, that you're just a conduit and you just happen to be in that particular situation, although I don't believe in coincidence at all, I think that when the situation is right for that particular individual or that situation, you know, the event, it's going to happen, prepare for it or not. But it's that initial doing. It's not the talk. What is it doing?
Right.
Yeah, I actually have a quick Reiki story for you. This was probably about 10, 15 years ago. And I actually didn't believe in Reiki. I thought it was a bunch of hooey, but I was going through a really difficult time in my life. And I had a sore throat, and I had this, I mean, not just a little bit of a sore throat, a ridiculously painful, can't swallow sore throat. And I've had it for over a month. And I went to see this doctor who was like, she did herbal stuff because I was very much into natural medicine as opposed to regular medicine. And she said, I'm going to try something. She says, I do Reiki. And I said, oh, I don't believe in that. She said, you don't have to. And she did something. And I don't know
what it was. That's a good
comeback. Yeah. And she did something, and I don't even know what it was, but I burst into tears on her table. I sobbed for 3 days, and that sore throat went away.
Yes, ma'am. I have a real quick one for you. I used to live in Lakewood, Ohio, and I had this lady friend of mine. She was a bar owner, and I would take frequent walks around, and I would sit and chat with her. And one day I went in there, and the lady that was in there said that she had been sick for a long time and wasn't able to come in. I had gone out of town for a couple of months, and so I hadn't seen her in a long time, so I just figured I'd stop and see her. So I caught her online, and I was chatting with her, and she said, I have had this enormous ache in my ears for a month and a half. The doctors can't figure out what the heck is wrong. I've had every pill under the sun. I'm so sick of taking pills, and nothing is working. And I said, all right, she got about 5-10 minutes, and I'm going to try something. Now, she knew I was psychic and I could do that kind of stuff, but this other thing she didn't know anything about. And so I did my thing long distance. Didn't see her, didn't touch her, you know, no hands on, no nothing. About 10 minutes later, she goes, I don't understand what's going on, but I don't feel the pain anymore. And I said, that's awesome. That's wonderful. I'm so happy for you. Now go drink some, you know, warm tea and get some rest and, you know, see in a couple of days. Yeah. Well, okay. I did see her. I went and I chatted with her. I tried to, anyway, chat with her a couple of days later. She refused to speak with me. Now, this was a long-going conversation that we were having for years. And this 10 minutes of time must have absolutely blew her whole conceptual idea about everything.
Yeah.
Okay.
And it's not, I have lost more people speaking to them because of this.
Because
than I care to tell about.
Yeah, because it's a whole paradigm shift. I get
it. But it shakes their whole body. I did a reading for a woman who was Jewish Orthodox, but wasn't practicing Jewish Orthodox. Her family from the old country, all of that. But she was like second generation born, and she didn't really want too much to do with it. And she had initially called me for a reading on some business matter, some housing transaction or some such. And I kept seeing this man, but the man was standing he was dressed in black with a white shirt and very proper with the curls down the side of his sideburns and the whole bit. And he would tell me what he liked and what he didn't like. And he was very stern about all this stuff. And he had a pleasant smile on his face, but he was standing in complete and total darkness, which kind of like freaked me out for weeks after that, because I couldn't figure that one out too much.
Yeah.
But I told her, I said, I know you're asking about this, but I want to ask you about this person that I keep seeing. So it took her 3 weeks to get back to me. She had asked her grandmother who it was, and the way that I described this person, it was her grandfather, that woman's husband, that had been deceased for a number of years.
Wow.
And for Jewish Orthodox
yeah.
to be told that one of their loved ones came from across the divide, literally,
right.
and said something, it blew her whole everything. She didn't want
sure.
to talk to me anymore. She was appreciative of the information, but didn't. I have not spoke to her since.
Yeah.
Jackie,
I'm so sorry. We have like 2 minutes left, so we have to wrap. I'm so sorry.
It's okay.
It was an interesting story.
I enjoyed the time.
Oh, very
awesome. Yeah.
So tell everybody your website and blog address.
My blog address is psychicconnections.blogspot.com, and the word connections is spelled connections.
Okay.
And so it's connections with an X, and my phone number is 330-824-1286.
Okay.
I'm going to be pranking you, Jackie, all week.
I know. You're going to
it'll be
great.
You have no idea how thrilled I am to have been a part of your magazine and to be a part of this show. You guys are amazing people. And everybody that has seen that magazine has said, basically, this is off the hook. You guys, you're really rocking it out.
Thank you so much.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you so much for coming on. So next week, we hope that we will be talking to Merle Gibson, although we understand she is getting married the next day. So, you know, we'll plan on talking to Merle Gibson next week. She's an author, has a couple of really great books, including one about kids and ghost hunting. And then she also has a teen series that's called the Teen Ghost Hunter series. So that'll be next week. So next week, Paranormal Underground Radio on Z-Talk Radio, 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern, and other times in the flyover states.
I can't laugh every time you say that.
I know. I've trademarked that now, Rick. So
yeah. See, I'm from Chicago, so she says that.
Yeah, trademarked by Carefree Enterprises Incorporated. So thank you, Jackie. Thank you, Rick. Everybody, until next week, Paranormal Underground Radio on Z-Talk Radio. Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
If you'd like to be a guest on Paranormal Underground Radio, email editor@paranormalunderground.net. Until next week, keep exploring the unexplained at www.paranormalunderground.net and join us again next week for Paranormal Underground Radio on the Z-Talk Radio Network.